does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has
it all. This morning, on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy. It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
It's electric, and it feels like probably 75-80% Purdue fans. But as Coach Painter always says, right, players got to give the crowd something to cheer about.
Lawyer, feed it. Edie, miss it.
Major highlight from Heidi.
Spin Newton, seven to shoot. Double from Colvin, it leaves Caravan open.
What a find by Newton.
Hey, Rav, you make a mistake, they make you pay.
Edie with a left hand, left it short, trying to score over Caravan on a left-handed hook shot. It's rebounded by Connecticut. We're down to 4:10 remaining in the game.
Oh, that's one. Zach definitely wants back.
Time quickly running out on the Boilermakers.
UConn fans on their feet behind head coach Dan Hurley. Shot clock down to four. Caravan, loaded, clinging, exclamation point.
It's been that kind of night for Purdue's perimeter shooting. Braden Smith will get a cheer from the Purdue crowd, and so will Zach Edey, as Zach Edey gets a hero's applause as he goes to the bench area.
It is a UConn coronation. The Huskies make history. Back-to-back national champions.
The real difference ended up being their ability to offensive rebound in the second half.
Yeah, they just did a really good job guarding the three, and we got in the paint plenty of times. We just didn't convert on a lot of them.
You can say whatever you want about me. You can say however I play. You can say whatever, but you can never say that I didn't give it my 100% every single time I stepped on the floor.
We put ourselves in a great position now, and we took advantage of it. We just came up a little bit short to a great team, but I told our guys in the locker room, like, you know, when you have the most wins in school history, you're the first team to win back-to-back championships by multiple games since 1976, which was the last undefeated team in college basketball, and you get, you know, an eyelash away from winning it all, like that, you know, that's the standard.
I know I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a...
How the hell did Seton Hall beat UConn by 15? How the hell did UConn lose three games this past season?
Creighton almost beat him by 20.
Butler was super competitive with UConn twice this year. Pretty darn incredible. It's a cheat code. The UConn Huskies, Dan Hurley's quote is cocky as hell, and it is spot on. We make a hard tournament look really easy, and they did it to the second-best team in college basketball. Last night, the Purdue Boilermakers, in one of the more just head-scratching performances you'll see, given the fact that the three-point line has been such a weapon for them all season long. I don't know if UConn had an eclipse around the three-point line, but they seemed to do that. Just absolute suffocation of the perimeter. Lived with Zach Edey doing really what Zach Edey does, but no threes. That was the game plan executed absolutely beautifully for UConn. Good Tuesday morning to you. I'm Kevin Bowen, Andy Sweeney. And Mark Dykton, as always, Rick Carlisle going to join us here like he does every Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, as the Pacers are, ironically enough, for Zach Edey, north of the border tonight against the Raptors. To me, Andy, just boil it down to that. I mean, unbelievable by Danny Hurley just to be so committed to letting Zach Edey go one-on-one. We're not going to help when Klingon's on the floor. Twos are not threes. We'll live with it. And that's what, to me, it just all boiled down to. Sure, the offensive rebounds, as he points out as well, but still, 1 of 7 from the three-point line. It's just an astonishing, very foreign number, both of those numbers, for Purdue, really, all season long.
Yeah, good morning to you guys. I'm interested today, as we sit here, the psyche of the Purdue fan. You know, you go into last night, you're trying to have confidence. You know, Edey is better than Klingon, and you know that, and you're like, okay, if we can dominate that side or that position, if you will, on the floor, maybe get some foul trouble. You never thought you would be that destitute, right, from the three-point line. So, you know, I'm stuck as we go today. You know, KB, I'm stuck between... you know, Matt Painter learned so much last year and the last few years about how he needed to change things. He needed to alter things. I don't know if you're the college basketball world and you're Purdue, for instance, and I know Zach Edey's gone and the team will be different as, you know, players move along. You look at what UConn is doing. What are the lessons you can learn? You know, if you're Matt Painter, I wonder when he goes back with his coaching staff, hey, you know, last year we lost early. We weren't athletic enough. We didn't shoot the three enough. You go out, you get a guy like Lance Jones, middle part of the season. Guys like Cam Heidi, by the way, his dunk, easily the highlight of the night for Purdue. He goes up and gets it, and so he altered things. Now, you know, you look at how great UConn is, but boy, I thought last night, whether it be everybody outside of Edey and Braden Smith, just absolutely no-showed. I thought the body language by Purdue wasn't great when they realized, wow, we can't stop these guys, and these guys are doing a pretty damn good job of stopping us as well. So it's been a magical season, but it didn't have a magical ending.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly true. Nothing close to magical at all last night. I thought a couple things stood out to me game-wise. Certainly the first 12, 14 minutes. I mean, haymakers thrown both ways.
As good of a game as we've had.
Just an outstanding start. Edey was incredible. I thought the shot-making from Edey, like, he was making tough, tough shots. And I thought Bill Rafferty pointed it out so well. When Edey traveled there, just, I think it was about 6:50, 7 minutes to go in the first half, he clearly was tired. And they hit a media timeout, and Caleb first goes in the game, and Donovan Klingon gets an and-one. And then on the other end, I think it might have been Trey Kaufman-Wren commits an offensive foul. And Edey is sat for 30 seconds, yeah. And Matt Painter can't sit him anymore.
No, he couldn't.
So he's back in the game, but that sequence right there, an Edey travel, an and one from Klingon with Edey on the bench, and then an offensive foul, it's just like the door gets cracked open for UConn, and then all of a sudden I just felt like the game tilted towards UConn. And even though Braden Smith hits, you know, the fadeaway three, it cuts it to two, you know, UConn gets a couple baskets there right before halftime, you just felt like, when that little sliver of hope all of a sudden allowed UConn to assert themselves, it was swimming upstream the rest of the way. And I'll do this a lot, I think, throughout the show, but I just cannot get over the lack of three-point attempts. And I don't say it, Andy, in that Purdue passed up great looks. I mean, they shot 7 threes. I believe I have this right. I think it's the fewest three-point attempts a Purdue team has had in 10 years.
Yeah, it's Indiana-like. It's Mike Woodson.
1 of 7.
Yeah.
So the one make is obviously a season low. Historically, CBS threw this up there late in the telecast last night. It's the fewest three-point attempts in a title game since 95. Back when maybe the three-point line wasn't used as much as teams utilize it nowadays. And again, I don't feel like this was a bunch of, well, no, Braden Smith, shoot that. Lance Jones, usually you have like a neon green light. Why are you passing that up? I mean, they just didn't get any clean looks whatsoever. UConn just absolutely suffocating. I said to you yesterday, my one like big worry I didn't give much attention to last week that I was reminded of in watching UConn Saturday night is, man, those guards can really defend. And they're big and they're long. And I just thought they ate Purdue up on the perimeter. And that was the difference. I mean, if you play out Purdue's averages from 8 of 20, that's Purdue's average as a lethal 3-point shooting team. I mean, if you want to play the math, I mean, right there is what, 1 3 versus 8, and that's 21 points. That obviously makes a huge difference.
It's a big difference
in
right?
the game, and you didn't offset it with the free throw line. You know, there's been games this year where Purdue's only made, what, 4 or 5 threes. But they can offset it when they hit 20-some free throws. But when Klingon doesn't get that second foul in the first half, you don't live in the bonus as much as you have in previous games. Boy, unless that backup center would have got another 15 minutes for UConn and could have fouled Edey on every trip down the floor, you just weren't going to make up for it. So if you want to boil it down to the game itself, to me, it was just the absolute suffocation of Purdue behind the arc.
I don't know if you saw this, but Draymond Green, I'm blanking on the kid's name that fouled out Sampson.
5 minutes, yeah, correct?
Draymond Green said, you really helped break Edey down. I'm like, everyone's like, bro, chill, man. Dude played 5 minutes and fouled out. He caught a couple lobs, but that had nothing to do with the general outcome of the game. You know, I hate doing this to Purdue fans. I thought last night, to be quite honest, KB, I thought it was worst case scenario. And I thought it was worst case scenario because it's the second game in a row outside of, is it not, outside of Zach Edey, where we leave not thinking too much about their offense. You said that, I think, yesterday, that offensively, the NC State game, there wasn't a ton to take away other than that the Jones and Lawyer went to bed on Saturday night, Sunday morning, feeling pretty damn good about themselves. And obviously, and I was wrong, you were wrong on this particular item, that did not care. That had no carryover whatsoever. And it was worst case scenario because, you know, they allowed Edey to get his. And Edey talked about this after the game, that even as great as his numbers were and as good as he was at times during the game, you mentioned where he got tired there in the first half. There were lulls. And I swear to you, it was the first time that we saw Edey kind of have bad body language and be tired. So if you're a Purdue guy, okay, and when I say it's worst case scenario, it's Edey's getting his and it doesn't matter. It's Edey looks tired for, in my estimation, you know, the first time that I could really remember him being tired to where, you know, the announcers are saying he's got to get out of the game. And Matt Painter had to go to Caleb First, who just could not play in this game whatsoever. And then, you know, Braden Smith was fine. He had 12 points, didn't shoot the ball well, back-to-back games. And then your guards just, A, they couldn't guard UConn's guards, and UConn's guards made it sure that all those shots, all those threes, all those good looks that we are so very accustomed to Purdue getting, they didn't get. And then, you know, you go to the bench. There was nothing. You know, Matt Painter tried to go to the bench. There was nothing on the bench. So you're not hitting threes. You're not getting to the free throw line. Edey, while being great, is compromised. And then the guard play, I'm sorry to Purdue fans, it looked like another level. And that's why, you know, last night you needed to knock down threes. You needed to get to the line. You needed a couple guys. You needed probably at least one of those guards along with Klingon to get in foul trouble. The foul line has saved them so very often this season, and it didn't last night. It was worst case scenario. They had no, you know, they jumped out of an airplane and the parachute didn't work over and over again.
Give major credit to Dan Hurley, who, you know, says to Tracy Wolfson there early on as Edey is looking like Shaq, like, wow, we're going to have to do some things differently. I mean, he was very blunt and very honest. And really, when Klingon was on the floor, they didn't do anything differently. I mean, he stood to that game plan of when Klingon is out there, we're going to live with the twos, and we know Donovan Klingon can make it at least somewhat tough on Edey, and he will wear him down eventually. And again, not getting Klingon second foul. I mean, you saw Klingon get real foul happy there in the second half.
Yep.
Like, there's precedent for that, but there was that moment there, I think 9 or 10 minutes, where I thought Klingon could have been called for a second, and they didn't call it. And it's just one of those things where, again, you have to be so damn perfect against UConn, and the game plan obviously switches when Klingon goes off the floor, because then the other kid gets in the game, and he's certainly absolutely cannot stay on the floor whatsoever. But yes, just a terrible night from Purdue's others, really. I thought Braden Smith had a nice bounce back game. I know, you know, you can look at the shooting numbers, but I thought he quarterbacked it pretty well. But just to get nothing from Lawyer, nothing from Lance Jones, nothing from Gillis. Like, you got it. And those guys gave you something Saturday night.
I know.
I think that's what is extra frustrating. It's not, this is not Butler, UConn. Butler's in a dome and they can't throw it in the ocean. No, you shot it really well Saturday night. And yet you didn't even get any hope from behind the arc. And as I tweeted out at the final horn last night, it's the greatest 2-year run in my lifetime in college basketball. What UConn has just completed to go 12 of 12. In these tournament games, to cover all of them, to win all of them by at least 13 points, to have significant roster turnover. That's different than UNLV and Duke in the early 90s. That's different than Florida in 06 and 07. To have done that, and really, it's not like they just totally revamped it portal-wise from last year
no,
to this year.
That's not the case at all.
It is wildly impressive. Dan Hurley is psychotic. But man, can he coach? I mean, I told you guys
Purdue had to beat them because of Dan Hurley's antics. And boy, he was full of them last night, wasn't he?
plus one. I don't know if I've seen the two-hand shove to a player before.
With 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to
exactly,
go in the
game. With them leading by whatever it was, 17. A dozen or 15 at that point. They trailed for
six minutes
of a 240-minute tournament. Like, it's just, it's absurd what UConn now has done in back-to-back years. And I think just to kind of put a little bow tie Purdue-wise, the opportunity is not a given. You know, the opportunity is not a given. Now, Purdue had unbelievable health all year long. The same starting lineup for the entire season. That's never happened in school history. They didn't have the Haas elbow, the Hummel ACL. Hell, they didn't have the Jamal Shedd turn of an ankle in the Sweet 16. And now Houston is done. And obviously, you're going to lose a generational talent. Now, you know, Purdue made, what, two Sweet 16s and Elite Eight in three consecutive years right before Zach Edey arrived, back in 2020. So they clearly have done this before, and they will look a lot different. I mean, if you just look at them from a wing standpoint, if you want to project out, Miles Colvin and Camden Heidi and Kanan Ketchings, who's coming in, I mean, that's a very different-looking kind of guard wing-oriented offense. And you know, what does Trey Kaufman Wren look like when you commit him to a little bit more minutes? But obviously it's just going to look such a 180 from how they've played here in these past few years through Zach Edey.
One last thing, I think you mentioned what stood out to me in the game, and that is, you know, we don't sit here today and Lawyer and Jones missed a bunch of shots. I think this
they didn't get clean looks.
This is the most key thing of the game, and I would love to, you know, I know we had Tom Crean yesterday, but you know, I'd almost love to pick the brain of a coach, of someone, a basketball Betty, if you will, that knows what is going on there, how next level UConn was, not only in their play, but their dedication to the game plan that, you know, if Lawyer stood out there and was chucking threes and Jones stood out there and they were chucking threes, we could walk in here and today and say they just shot a bad percentage, or we could nitpick on the type of shots, KB, that they made, but they never got the abundance of opportunities. And just think about, you don't have to go back to just the NC State game, but one reason that they have raised their profile this year as a team with the three-point shooting is because of the looks that they get. I mean, Matt Painter, and using the inside game of Zach Edey and the point guard savviness, if you will, of Braden Smith, having a point guard and having a big like Edey, I mean, the thing that you get from that offense and from that improved offense is you get looks. That's the crazy thing. You're right about last night is they didn't get the looks. At times, they didn't have the opportunity to even step to the line and miss that shot. And that's some next level stuff from UConn, dude.
And it's a total 180 from what NC State did Saturday night. NC State, and they had some success with Edey in turning him over on Saturday night, but you know, UConn looked at it, and you know, I kind of had a laugh. This is always how, now of course Notre Dame basketball never had a player like Donovan Clingan, but Mike Bray was always a no, threes are worth more than twos. We'll single team the big guy all game long. We'll live with that because you won't be as disciplined to throw it in the post,
right?
And you know, there's just a lot of stuff that has to happen for that big, you know, in a way. The big guy at times can be like a running back in the NFL of like, no, I mean, we will live with it. We're not going to let you hit, you know, the 40-yarder.
Yeah, go get 3.5 yards.
And go back to the first half, Andy. Purdue had 2 3-point attempts the entire first half.
And one was at the very end. One was Lawyer's heave at the end, was it not?
For some reason,
did that count?
I don't think they counted that. But the two was the Braden Smith late clock fadeaway in front of the UConn bench, which went in. And the other one was Miles Colvin, a challenge three, somewhat late clock as well. Like, again, I don't feel like this was a guy's afraid of the moment, passing it around the horn, and we're looking for the best shot. It was just an absolute.
It wasn't there.
Yeah, just an absolute, again, suffocation of the three-point line for UConn. Again, Rick Carlisle going to join us here coming up at 8, certainly a lot of reaction to this. We'll get some audio as well as Zach Edey's career comes to a close. It's crazy to think, you know, at times I thought Edey was just a step or two off, and yet he still has 37.
I know.
I mean, like,
the same thing.
Part of me is like, Kevin, like, don't even say that. But my eyes, I don't think, totally lied. It just seemed like
it wasn't his best game.
Maybe a few rebounds that he usually has. Right. And UConn, 14 offensive rebounds. That is a huge stat as
well. We talked about it. No, the length of the guards and then offensive rebounding. Boy, that was the key last night. We talked about it on Monday. We'll get to some of the sound, but Matt Painter, after the game, really, really stressed how great. And we've talked about it here, how great that defense was from UConn last night. So 75-60, that's your final in the national championship game. Like KB mentioned, Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle, the NBA was off last night. They're all back at it tonight. Pacers, of course, on the road. I'm trying not to be nervous about this game against Toronto, the stinky Raptors, if you will. So we'll dive into that with Coach Carlisle coming up at 8 o'clock. What did Matt Painter say after last night's championship game? We'll talk about it. Your morning check down coming up next. Wake up call, hanging out with you on this Tuesday, 93.5.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali ribociclib 200 milligrams at kisqali.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali ribociclib 200 milligrams at kisqali.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
107.5 The Fan.
All right, it's Tuesday. It's 8 o'clock. You know what that means. Head coach of the Indiana Pacers coming off a big, big-time win. You talk about franchise regular season wins. They don't get much bigger than what the Pacers did on Sunday, and it's been a busy kind of 48 hours since then, even off the floor for the Pacers. We'll get to that with Rick Carlisle here. Right now, as it's Pacers and Raptors tonight north of the border. Coach, good morning. Were you able to dial up? Was it maybe TSN to watch the national title game last night in your hotel room?
Yeah, the game was on. It was interesting. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but there was it sounded like a radio broadcast that was kind of done like simulcast. Jay Billis was the analyst, and there was another gentleman doing the play-by-play, and then they would go to Tracy Wolfson, and it seemed like there was like a double broadcast going on or something, but it was, it was good. It was good. And, the game obviously was a tough, tough game for Purdue. And you just, I don't know, I guess my take, if you're going to ask, which I assume you might at some point, but I thought Matt Painter just did a phenomenal, amazing job this year. And they're just unlucky. I mean, they just ran into the wrong team at the wrong time in history. I mean, Connecticut was just so highly manned at every position, so deep, so skilled, so tough, and so tied together that it was it turned out to be just an impossible task. But Purdue just they were spectacular this year, and just a disappointing end. But even though the game was tough, I mean they competed hard, and it was just a tough night.
When you watch a game like that, are you watching that game, and whether it be Zach Edey or, of course, Klingon or the UConn guards, are you watching that game and kind of in your mind projecting, you know, as a guy who runs an organization, are you putting coaches in the NBA, are you projecting, hey, here's how I think this guy or that guy can fit at the next level?
Well, I suppose you can't help but do that a little bit, but very interestingly, you know, Zach Edey last year, if he had come out last year, he may have been a first round pick, but you know, he may also have been somewhere in the second round. And this year coming up, I mean, he is up there in the first round somewhere. I don't know. I haven't looked at the, you know, the draft boards or anything like that. But, you know, the guy had, he could have had 40 points last night. And, you know, it was pretty clear what Connecticut was doing. I mean, they played most of the game straight up on him with Klingon, and they were, you know, trying to take away threes. I don't know if, you know, I know Purdue had one three at one point in the game. I don't know if they ever had a, even got a second three, but you take all those threes out of the game, and, you know, just make them grind for twos. And then at the other end, you're getting twos and threes. I mean, it's tough sledding.
1 of 7 from three, 3 makes, 8 attempts. That was the previous season low. So season lows in both of those for Purdue last night. Rick Carlisle with the Sear Payless Liquors Hotline. Again, Pacers and Raptors tonight north of the border. We definitely want to get to your basketball team here in just a second, but I'd remiss, looked like before you guys boarded the plane, you had a little viewing experience for the eclipse yesterday. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, phenomenal. I mean, you hear all the stuff about all the people traveling to Indiana, and, you know, yeah, we had all these warnings, you know, traffic is going to be crazy and there might be, you know, some bad activity with, you know, this. I mean, the roads were empty, and we got there, and it was really a perfect day. And, you know, everybody's got the glasses. And, I mean, the whole thing was, a lot of people downplayed it and, you know, said, you know, this is kind of a kooky thing. And why would you travel from all across the country? And I mean, this thing was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable. And so the amazing part to me was, you know, not only did it become dark, but the temperature went down. I don't know how many degrees.
Yeah.
It went down at least 10 or 12 degrees. And, you know, we had our entire travel party, you know, out on the tarmac, and they had folded chairs set up, and it was a beautiful day. It felt like San Diego, you know, in Indianapolis, and it completely memorable. So, you know, just fantastic.
Rick Carlisle with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. See, Coach, you can like it. KB wasn't too hot on the eclipse, and I told him, hey, this is the
once. I was nervous about the traffic.
This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
I fell for the traffic rabbit hole. It was a breeze. Driving home, there was nobody on the road.
He got scared off by the media, Coach. That must have been what it was. Rick Carlisle with us, Pacers head coach. Of course, they get ready for Toronto tonight. That tip-off at 7 o'clock. Our coverage here on the Fan beginning at 6:30. I tell you, the OKC win, Coach, and then you come back, and we talked so much on that game on Sunday, how much that was going to mean not only for playoffs, but for seeding, and you guys win 117-115 over Miami. And since the All-Star break, you guys have been 2-7 in those clutch game situations. What was different on Sunday, and overall, this weekend, you guys took care of business. What did you like? What did you like from your team and how they played?
Well, we played 48 minutes. You know, really, we played very, very well from beginning to end. And, you know, this sounds a little trite, a little basketball speakish, but, you know, our Pacers basketball is 48 minutes. And we saw a really good example last week in Brooklyn where, you know, the first 4 minutes of the game, we get down 11-4. And then, yeah, we have to call timeout. We come over and we talk about it, and we get the wheels back on the wagon, and then we go on a pretty good run and get a double-figure lead in the first half. And then we come out in the second half, and we're down 9-1 to start the second half. And the only point we scored was, I think, because Schroeder got a technical foul. And so, you know, you go down, you know, 20-5 in that 7 minute span. I mean, those 7 minutes, you cannot get back, and regardless of what else happens throughout the game. And so, you know, Sunday, you know, we played really well in the first half. We played really well in the third quarter. We didn't really have any of those kinds of lags at all. And you're never going to play a perfect game, but the way we competed, you know, in that first 36 minutes, set us up for the fourth quarter, and you knew this was going to be tough. You knew this was not going to be just an easy game, and they made a run, and some crazy things happened, and they threw in some ridiculous shots, and then we fouled a couple times on three-point shots, and before you know it, it's a one-possession game. But at that point, we had done enough to absorb that kind of run, you know, in the scope of the entire 48 minutes, and we showed great poise. You know, we executed an intentional foul on a three-point shot up three, and were able to survive it. And so, yeah, it was a great win, and it's a kind of experience that our team needs right now. But the lesson for us, you know, as we head into tonight in Toronto with a team that, you know, seemingly doesn't have much to play for on the one hand. On the other hand, I mean, they have been killing it the last two games. They won in Milwaukee, and then they kicked Washington's butt two nights ago, and 42 points in the first quarter. So, you know, we're running into a Brooklyn-type scenario here on the road, and we're going to have to be ready, and we're going to have to do a better job.
Pacers-Raptors tonight. It'll be in Cleveland Friday. Close out the regular season against Atlanta Sunday, and already at 45 wins, 25, 35, 45. That's been the progression here over the last three seasons. Obviously, Rick Carlisle, a massive part of that. He's with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, last week I asked you about TJ McConnell and his just endless contributions off the bench, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about Obi Toppin. Continue to be thoroughly impressed by what he's given you. And, you know, in a year where you've, you know, put him in different roles, and obviously the bench has not been some, you know, steady personnel operation. You've had to try, and injuries have forced you into a lot of different combos there. What have you seen from Obi in your first year with him?
Well, really love him. I mean, beautiful person, highly skilled. I mean, how often are you going to find a 6'10 guy who could probably, you know, he's probably an Olympic caliber, you know, athlete as far as, you know, if you put him in the, you know, in the Olympic trials for the 220 or the 440, the way he runs, I mean, he'd be competitive. You know, I don't know where he would be in the whole thing, but he's that kind of athlete, skill wise. I mean, he handles it. He passes it. He has feel. We've asked him this year to concentrate on his defense and rebounding. He's gotten better in both areas, and he's just been the ultimate, you know, team guy. And so, you know, with him and Pascal Siakam, you know, we've got a really good 1-2 punch at the four position. And then, as you've seen at times, you know, when they go with Kevin Love out there at five, or, you know, tonight there's going to be situations where they go small, you know, we have Obi at five as more than a viable option. It's now a lineup that's just simply a go-to lineup, and we can switch and we can do other things. We can still have the ability to defend. So he's been terrific. And, you know, I really believe that Indiana's been a great situation for him coming off of his Knicks experience. He did a great job with the Knicks over two or three years, whatever it was, and developed each year, but he's taken an additional step this year, and certainly has been an enormous part of any success we've had.
Coach, I feel like we see it a little bit more in the college game, but in the last couple of weeks, twice you've been in a situation where do you foul up three? We saw it, of course, with that Chicago game a couple weeks ago, and then again on Sunday with Miami. How much is that like a debate with your staff, or is that kind of always been your locked in principle of we will foul up three, whatever, given X amount of time left on the clock?
Well, there are always a certain set of factors that you have to consider. One thing is, you know, do you have the ability to make the judgment call on screening, or excuse me, a fouling on the catch, you know, facing away from the basket, not in the shooting motion? I mean, we've seen over the years, I mean, it's always a nightmare, you know, with guys like Kobe Bryant, you know, who's so clever, so crafty that he would just angle his body, and on the catch, he would be turning and shooting, and he had to be very, very aware. Otherwise, you'd foul him in the act of shooting, and then the guy might make a shot, and you'd give him 4 points, you know, or something like that. So that's one thing. The other thing is, do you have a good enough rebounding team? So, you know, the other night, Well, in the Chicago game, we put five big guys out there. We had a ball that caromed off there, and Obi couldn't get his hands on it, knocked it out of bounds, and they got it back and scored. And so now we end up in overtime. The other night, they had a violation, and so it was our ball, but we did a pretty good job of blocking out, et cetera. So, it's not as simple as just, hey, you foul up three, you're good, you're automatically good. You know, it just doesn't always go that way. There's a certain time threshold. If there's too much time on the clock, it's something that's not in the cards for us. So, you got to be somewhere under 10 seconds. I don't want to get into the whole thing, but anyway, it worked out the other night. It's special teams in basketball is exactly what it is. And, you've got to spend time on it, and, you've got to know all the risk factors as well, but it worked out in the Miami game and all was good.
Pacers and Raptors tonight, our coverage here on The Fan beginning at 6:30. Rick Carlisle joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. A couple weeks ago, Coach, I asked you this, and you were very honest. You were like, we're watching where what the standings look like. You wake up this morning, currently the sixth seed, now just a game behind Cleveland. You guys actually have about a 48% chance, Coach, to get up there to the fifth seed, but we know Miami and Philly are right behind you, just three games left for you guys. So how much are you watching the standings? And I know you're not going to tell us the matchup, but internally looking forward, are you kind of hoping maybe that there's a matchup that you could get in the first round over another, perhaps?
I'm not watching it at all right now. It's we gotta focus on what's in front of us. And with three games left, I mean, you can get into a lot of those detailed speculatory conversations. It would be unhealthy for us to do that. What I do know is that, we have another Brooklyn-type scenario tonight. We're going to have to do a much better job with it. We're going to have to be much stronger throughout the game, as I mentioned. We got to work to continue building habits over these three games. And whatever happens at the end, happens at the end. I mean, there's a possibility of some significant movement, over the last three games. I think I may have told you guys this, my first year in Dallas, we were fighting all year just to get into the playoffs. So we had a good team. And then on the last night of the season, we beat Houston at home, which ensured we were going to be at least in the eighth spot. And then a couple of different wacky things happened. Michael Finley, who was playing with the Spurs at the time, hit a game-winning shot. And all of a sudden, San Antonio beat, I think it might have been New Orleans or something like that. And all of a sudden, we end up in the sixth position. And this is long before the play-in or any of that kind of stuff. And it got us into a favorable matchup at 6-3. Ironically, against San Antonio, who wasn't completely healthy, and we beat them 4-1. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I just do know that it's bad for karma.
Sure.
to start looking ahead. It's like anything else. You start speculating things that you don't have control over, and if this team loses to that team, and this, that, and the other, and that's why I don't look at scores it's not very frequently that I watch games at night because unless it's an opponent that we have the following night or something like that, because, you get so worked up about things you have zero control over. So what we do have control over is, our meeting this morning, our shoot around walkthrough this morning over at the arena. And then, how we walk out there tonight at 7, and we'll be concentrating on those things.
Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle here with us on the Wake Up Call on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I figured I'd give you a forum here. We haven't had a conversation with you since the owner there, Herb Simon, officially elected into the Hall of Fame. Such a cool honor. 89 years old, longest tenured owner in NBA history. I figured I'd give you a few minutes to celebrate that great honor that was announced last week.
Yeah, just so well deserved. And you know, Herb is a very unique owner. You know, there's a new age of owners that have come in over the last several years. I say several years. You know, Mark Cuban bought the Mavericks, I think, back in January of 2000. And, you know, Mark made a name for himself by completely rebranding the Dallas Mavericks and doing things in an overt way. He was very much out in front. He was all over the media. And he changed NBA basketball for the better in so many ways. But he did it in a way that was very much his personality. And that was by, you know, being out there. You know, Herb Simon is a guy that, you know, this is the third time I've been with the Pacers. I was with the Pacers as an assistant coach from 97 to 2000 with Larry Bird as the head coach. Came back in 03, you know, for a 4-year run. And then, you know, after 13 years in Dallas, I end up back here again. And a big part of it was, you know, the relationship that I had with Herb and the Simon family. And there was a familiarity there. And so, you know, what I'm getting at here is, you know, Herb is a guy that I have never seen in the locker room. You know, if the night of a game, after a game, I mean, if he comes to the facility, you know, he'll stay upstairs at the there's like a catwalk up above and look down, but he just never comes down and directly engages, you know, with the players very often. I mean, and so he's a very much private, behind the scenes person that has moved mountains over 40 years. I mean, took over a franchise that was failing back in 83. There were like eight to 10 million in debt or something like that. You know, they purchased it for 5 or 6 million and then completely reinvented the Indiana Pacers franchise. And over the years, you know, 8 trips to the conference finals, 1 trip to the NBA finals. The guy's been a massive force behind the scenes on all kinds of committees in support of the game. And so, you know, this is a nod to a man that has just quietly gone about his business. I don't even know how he was nominated. The nomination process is something that has to happen for someone to be considered. But it was so well deserved. And Herb is a guy that would have been, just knowing him, would have been completely embarrassed to even be nominated. You know, why you put my name out there like that? You know,
he's not that kind of guy.
But
yeah.
You know, as we saw the other night, I mean, they had a thing during the Miami game where they announced it officially, and they had a camera on him, and he stood up and acknowledged everyone. And I just look at him in that moment, and he's got his son Sean, who's at University of Southern California, who's a great kid, and so proud of his dad. And it must have been a very, very fulfilling moment for him. Very unexpected. You know, he would tell you that. I mean, that's just the kind of man that he is. But he is a giant of a man. And he and his brother Melvin, who is another man's man that was, you know, who just moved heaven on earth in Indianapolis and made Indiana, the city of Indianapolis, the Pacers organization, the Pacers franchise on the floor better, you know. And Herb has done it over 40 years. He is the longest tenured owner in NBA history. And just think about that. And so very, very, very well deserved for a man who is so very, very humble.
Really well said, because certainly some people in positions of that authority, they choose to live in a different spotlight than Herb Simon. So appreciate those words there, Coach. Good luck tonight. Congrats on everything so far. I know there's more still to be accomplished, but to get to that 45 win mark and be on the track to get into one of those 7-game opening round series, it's a big step for the franchise. So congrats on that direction, and hopefully you guys finish off this regular season well this week. Thanks, Coach.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
How the hell did Seton Hall beat UConn by 15? That was my thought driving in on this Tuesday morning. Boy, I thought pretty much summed up very accurately from Matt Painter, Braden Smith, among others there. Thank you to the Purdue Radio Network. Turner, for those audio clips, Mark, we appreciate the various Purdue reentries here over the last week or so. Andy, it wasn't the turnovers.
On the game. That's it.
If you would have said to me yesterday at 9:04, Kevin, UConn is going to win by 15. They're going to be in pretty much full control throughout the whole second half, I would say, what was the turnover number? 15? 16?
You would say the turnover number would be above 14 at least.
Right, right.
And probably 16, 17, something like that.
It was 9 for the game, which, again, for Purdue, that's very manageable. That's a Matt Painter sign on a dotted line, but the reality is 1 of 7 from 3-point land is such a foreign number for Purdue. The makes, the attempts. It's the fewest attempts in 10 years by a Purdue basketball team. Obviously, the fewest makes of the season. UConn absolutely suffocated Purdue on the perimeter. And again, a shout out and a major credit to one of the craziest coaches, certainly in modern college basketball, and Dan Hurley. He said, we will single team Zach Edey with Donovan Clingan. And my biggest key was you got to get Clingan in foul trouble. You couldn't get that second foul on him in the first half. I thought that game started to slip late first half. And then, you know, he battled a little bit of it in the second half. But at that point, the lead was swelling. And you weren't able to put any game pressure on him.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about it so much. And just to kind of reset for a new audience today, or in the 9 o'clock hour, you know, I think for both of us, KB, you know, especially for me, UConn just, they made, you know, we've been waiting, and it's not even a Zach Edey thing, but, you know, you're waiting to say, okay, who's going to have a bad game? And it just felt like UConn made this, and I said it at 7 o'clock, made it worst-case scenario so very much of the time last night for Purdue. I mean, outside of Edey and outside of Braden Smith, you had everyone else score just 11 points. You had 55 minutes of bench minutes if you're Matt Painter, and he went to the bench trying to find some sort of answer. You had 2 points in 55 minutes, and whether it be on the offensive side or the defensive side, it was worst-case scenario. It was Zach Edey can go get his, and it's not going to be enough to win. It's not going to be enough. And I think this is a huge point that you brought up. It's not going to be enough to get good looks, to get looks at all. And so if you're a Purdue fan, you're watching that game, and it became worst case scenario that Edey, while having 37 points, wasn't in some stretches dominant, but it's also the fact that Edey wasn't enough. And then you start looking at the three-point line, and the shots were not there. It's not even that the makes weren't there. It's not like they shot 2 for 25 or something like that. They shot 1 for 7. And so the makes weren't there, sure, but the attempts weren't there, and that is normal in your offense. And then you go to the rebounding edge. They lost the rebounding edge by 7, but the offensive boards, which has created second chance points, that wasn't there. We saw that earlier in the NC State game on Saturday night. And then finally, you know, you look at it, you didn't get to the free throw line nearly as much. You know, you wanted that to be, they shot 11 of 15, so they shot a very good percentage, much like the NC State game, but they didn't shoot enough of them. I'm not saying the officials swallowed their whistle in this Final Four, but Purdue, for whatever reason, in this game as well, they needed to have that number probably 8 to 10 more, 23, 25 free throw attempts. They didn't get that. And then, unfortunately, the Purdue guards, while being neutralized on the offensive side, they just could not stop UConn whatsoever. UConn got the shots that they wanted, whether it be a three or
too
at
big,
the rim.
Too skilled.
Just, you know, to me, you're watching that game, and outside the first, you know, 12, 14 minutes, Edie got tired, and it became worst-case scenario the final 25 minutes of that game.
Yeah, I think the offensive rebounding point is a good one to bring up, because you think about early in that NC State game. First off, NC State doubled Edie, you know, pretty much dug on him all game long. But for the most part, you know, when you look at those Fletcher Lawyer, Lance Jones threes early on Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken, I think both of them came after offensive rebounds. So that's when you naturally have breakdowns by defense. And now it isn't the same sort of, again, the suffocating defense on the perimeter there. You know, I said to you many times throughout the year, Andy, and just in general in describing Purdue, they are super reliable in two areas. One is they establish Edie, and kind of, I guess, a subset of that is that means they get to the foul line a whole lot. And then two is they're a terrific three-point shooting team. Again, second in the nation in three-point percentage throughout the season. Well, if you look at it last night, I mean, they, I would say, largely established Edie. The subset that there wasn't too reliable, though, foul line-wise. They shot 15 free throws. That's a small number for Purdue. They got into the bonus, you know, right around the midway point of each half. Like, that wasn't too much of the issue. They just couldn't take advantage of it off of that. And then again, the second reliable note, the three-point shooting. If they just shoot their averages, which, again, I know is kind of a hypothetical that seems crazy when you watch the entire 40-minute game play out, but Andy, last night they were 1 of 7. Their averages from 3 on the year is an 8 of 20 game. 8 makes, 20 attempts.
And that really gets a guy like Fletcher Lawyer going. He's not a rebounder. He's not a defender. If he's out there, he's got to get looks and knock those down. Otherwise, he's a zero.
Sure, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Just, and that's not against him. It's just that's what his specialty is getting and knocking down shots, and he never got any.
No, and I mean, the couple floaters he had didn't go in either. But, it, you know, if you go 8 of 20, if you hit your average, you know what? 8 times 3 is 24. 1 times 3 is 3. That's a 21-point difference from behind the arc for a team lost by, like, you can just boil it all down to that. I mean, they could have withstood the offensive rebounding if they just get to their averages, but it's not like they passed up a bunch of great looks. That's probably my grand takeaway as well, is, you know, at times last year in their tournament loss to Fairleigh Dickinson, I thought they looked scared from behind the arc. I thought they looked hesitant. I mean, they were the 290th or whatever they were, three-point shooting team in college basketball last year, so naturally you might have some of that fear factor moment, but that should not have been there last night. But again, so much credit to UConn for, if you even look at the 7 attempts Purdue had, they were absolutely challenged and deep. And I thought they made Edie really, really work. You know, you talked about Edie getting tired. You know, at one point he was 6 of 9, and I found myself just kind of jaw-dropping at Edie's first 10 or 12 minutes, like, damn, this is wildly impressive. But then part of me was like, is this sustainable for 40 minutes? Like, Klingon is at least making him catch it, whatever, 12 feet away from the basket, or he's making him work a little bit, and we're just so used to Edie being a machine, a 40-minute machine, where he just outlasts, you know, multiple guys fouling out.
He catches the ball, he puts that up over his shoulder, and he hits a little turnaround.
Yeah.
It's easy. Yeah,
but
that wasn't the case.
But again, Klingon, I thought, just made it tough for him and kind of wore him down, and eventually you saw it. I think at one point, Edie had missed 6 or 7 in a row. He had a travel. He airballed a free throw out of a timeout. Just stuff we're just not used to seeing from him at all. And I thought it all changed right there when he had that travel with about 6 or 7 minutes to go in the first half. Caleb first comes in, Klingon goes and one. Purdue gets an offensive foul at the other end, and now it's snowballed. Now it's and you know, snowballing to five doesn't seem like a lot, but in such a back and forth game early on, I felt like UConn just needed a little bit of a crack of the door. Purdue provided that, and next thing you know, UConn was, you know, living.
Yeah, I would say there's two things that listen, there's more than two. All these things that we're talking about, you're going to look back if you're Matt Painter and his coaching staff and the players, and you're going to be bothered by it. I would say the way, you know, coaches always talk about the way you end a half and then the way you start the second half. And if you look at last night, you're talking about, now that was a few minutes before the end of the half, but what you're talking about is the latter parts of the first half. You know, they get down six, which isn't a big deal, but then you got to come back in the second half and you got to do something with it. And immediately you get a foul on Kling and you're thinking, okay, this is good, right? This is the Purdue formula, is now let's get one of their bigs in foul trouble. And you know that no one else is going to be able to guard Edie. And if you can get Kling out of the game, what then? Then they're going to double. Then they're going to dig. Then they're going to send extra defenders at Edie. And that would open up Fletcher Lawyer and Lance Jones and Brain Smith and everybody else. But, you know, they get the Edie miss layup, they get an Edie miss dunk, and in the middle, Tristan Newton hits a three, and now you don't end the first half as well as you would like. It's a six-point game, and you're thinking, okay, let's... And that, I would say the way they came out in the second half was
surprising. And Edie missed a couple shots at the rim.
Giving the Matt Painter so good at that sort of thing, right, out of timeouts, out of the half, and they come out, they're down nine, and then you mentioned it's snowball. Then the other thing, and we've mentioned this, but we haven't directly mention this, and it's a staggering stat from last night. Braden Smith is the only player on Purdue's team that had an assist.
Yep.
And he had eight of them. And again, Braden Smith, I have said it today three or four times, Braden Smith had a fine game. He had a nice bounce back game, I think, for the most part. If he hit a couple of those elbow jumpers, I would probably feel even better about his game. But Braden Smith was the quarterback who consistently had the defensive lineman in his face. You know, in his face, hitting him after the play, at his feet. He never had a clean pocket. That was Braden Smith. But the fact that, like, I would... Like, if I'm Matt Painter, they probably have the printouts on analytics. How many – can you think of a game where one player had an assist, especially for this team?
That's a historical number.
It's again, he had eight assists. Nobody else had an assist. Not even Zach Edey catches, kicks it out, Lance Jones hits a three. Not one of those the entire game. It's unbelievable.
And again, that is so much of how their offense can play. I mean, when Edey would kick it out, it was – immediately on the catch, UConn defenders there. You swing it around the horn. Hey, extra pass. Like, nothing got to clean looks. I mean, Miles Colvin tied for the game-high lead in three-point attempts for Purdue. I mean, you want to talk about a recipe that isn't going to lead to a win? That's it. And if you just look at the numbers, Lawyer averages just under 4 3-point attempts a game. He didn't shoot his first one until 5 minutes to go in the game. Lance Jones averages nearly 6 3-point attempts. We've watched Lance Jones this year.
Oh, I know.
Andy, he'll shoot it from Attica.
A couple times.
Shoot it from Crawfordsville.
And they maybe needed that.
His first one is 3 minutes to go in the game, his first attempt, his only attempt.
Yeah.
And it gets blocked.
Yeah.
And then if you look at Braden, you know, it's that one fadeaway in the first half. He only takes two. You know, Mason Gillis, they ran that set form early in the second half, and it's an air ball. It's just, you know, and Gillis usually shooting, you know, three a game. You know, just a massive credit to Dan Hurley and their execution of saying, when Klingon is on the floor, we are not going to help. We'll live with the twos. We think we can defend without fouling, and we'll take away the 3-point line. And it was a strategy that was challenged significantly in the first 10 minutes. Dan Hurley said it to Tracy Wolfson. Right now, like, we are worried about what he's doing, and we're going to have to mix it up. I mean, he said those exact words to Tracy Wolfson and then never really mixed it up. And I thought the other big thing in the first half was, if you just could have got Kling in that second foul, what would that have done? Because we saw the backup. The backup couldn't. I mean, he had 5 fouls in 5 minutes. So, you know, if you could have gotten the second on him and forced UConn to double a little bit more, you know, maybe you do find a little bit more early success in general, because Kling finished the game with 4 fouls. I mean, but not getting that second one on him was, I thought, a huge issue.
Yeah, you know, I want to take this a different way. So earlier in the show, I asked the question, and I'll ask it here, but I want to look at more of the Purdue fan and kind of projecting what they're thinking. You know, UConn is so now, with the win last night and what they did this season and last season, KB, they are historically great. They will be remembered historically great. People in 10, 15, 20, 25 years, you know, our kids, hopefully our grandkids, you know, will be talking about the great teams, the great eras, the great runs in college basketball. And UConn has been that, whether you want to go back to 1999 or you want to look at even recently.
Is that hyperbole by me? Because I think it's the best run of my life. I think it's the best two-year run, born in 89. I think it's the best two-year run of my life.
No, I mean, I can go back to 99, or I can do what you're saying in the last 2 years, and I know they had some lean years. It checks out. I mean, UConn is a blue blood. They're a powerhouse. They have moved past. I mean, I know Indiana fans don't want to hear, but they moved past, in my mind, some historic programs. UConn has moved past Indiana and Louisville and some of these different programs.
I think they already passed that.
Well, I mean, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, last night just concretes it even more that, you know, if I'm Matt Painter, two things. Number one, if I'm Matt Painter, you know, you look at this year, the evaluation of this season, we've talked about it. They challenge themselves in the non-con, and they win the Big Ten by, what was it, three games in the regular season, and then they go and they make this run by winning five games and getting to the national title game. So, you know, do you look at it? You know, last year I thought they had to do some soul searching. Now I'm interested with so many new pieces, and Edie's going to be obviously off to the NBA. How Matt Painter views the loss last night of, is there soul searching that needs to be done? Is there somebody who has got a lot of minutes who may get Mason Gillis and might be coming off the bench? Like, I am interested in how he views his team through the prism of, hey, guys, we just lost to this historically great UConn team, which ended up being a bad matchup. And then, you know, I know it's heartbreaking, frustrating. What is it for the Purdue fan, you know, who... You didn't lose because of a single call. You didn't lose because some BS happened and there was something fluky. There's really not much to complain about. You lost, and UConn was just the better team. You leave being like, we gave it our all, but UConn was just dominant. I don't know if that makes the Purdue fan feel better or worse today, because you don't know when you're going to be back. I mean, that's the whole narrative of this team making the Final Four, is you had to wait more than four decades to finally get back.
Yeah, I guess there's a little bit of Colt Patriot feel to it of just, damn, like, they are so good. And you can acknowledge that, but at the same time, I think you can be incredibly bummed by these opportunities. Don't grow on trees. And while I do think that Matt Painter is going to get Purdue into the month of April on several more occasions throughout his coaching tenure, like, betting odds would probably say that's at best a coin flip chance right now. And, you know, to be fair to Purdue, they had a lot break their way this year. I mean, let's just be totally honest. And that's not something we typically say about Purdue, but for the first time in school history, they had the same starting five the entire year. I mean, what, Gillis maybe missed a game, if I'm imagining correctly, like, back in the non... Brayden obviously got banged up, but still, it's not like you had guys out for, you know, any significant stretch whatsoever. You didn't have the Jamal Shedd turn of an ankle. Andy, your path was, you know, Indy and Detroit. I mean, you can't ask for a better path to the Final Four.
You got NC State in the national semifinal. Yeah, you know,
And I think their region still offered some roadblocks. I don't want to act like Purdue just had a cakewalk. I just mean where they were slotted. You know, Indianapolis and Detroit, that's exactly what you would want from a driving standpoint for your fan base. We pretty much knew in December that's the path that they would be heading on. It's not always that sort of path. Now, granted, you can still make it in different ways. I mean, hell, UConn was, what, a four seed last year? And, you know, they obviously got to the championship game. And Purdue has, you know, been on the brink of a Final Four without a dominant post player. Now, Carson Edwards was historic, and Ryan Klein certainly had the game of a lifetime. But still, you know, Purdue has been able to do it without this dominant of a post player. But still, I keep on coming back to, these opportunities don't grow on trees. And in no way do I expect Purdue's next 5 to 10 years look how it did for Indiana post-2002 championship game run. But because they are the two Big Ten prominent, dominant programs from a notoriety standpoint in our state, I mean, look at Indiana since that 0-2 championship game.
There's just too much stability.
They haven't even gotten to an Elite Eight. That's where you do. I mean, it's Alabama's first ever trip to the Final Four. NC State, you know, whatever. Imagine saying to that fan base in 83, you're not going to get there for this amount of time. It is not a given. Granted, I do think Purdue is pretty well equipped to sustain some level. I mean, 7 straight years as a top 4 seed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's damn impressive.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying they win the Big Ten next year, but if they fell off and they were, 15-16 next year, towards the bottom third quadrant, if you will, of the Big Ten, I would be stunned.
Like, if I was
there's
a betting
solid
man,
solid stuff there.
I would say the 7 straight years as a top 4 seed goes to an 8th year. Now, I don't think there'll be a 1 or a 2 necessarily. Obviously, it's April 9th. We know how college basketball operates.
I think it'll be close.
We don't even have a head coach at Kentucky, and the portal is probably just getting started, frankly. So I need to see how some of this plays out. But right now, I think Purdue looks like on paper they could have, whatever, a top 15-ish type team next season.
I would say this as well. When we talk about, and some fan bases are different with this, when we talk about, you don't know when you're going to be back. Matt Painter, after the game, even talked about it. He said, hey, we did everything we could. We knew this was going to be an opportunity for us, and we left it all out there, and we took this opportunity. We messed up last year, and we ended up in the national title game this year. I don't believe, it's easy for me to say, I don't believe the Purdue fan took this for granted at all. Maybe some of the winning in the regular season the last few years, I think you take for granted a little bit, just because, and that might not even be for granted. That's just having the confidence that your team is going to get it done. Yeah, I don't think they did. I don't think they took anything for granted. The fan base understanding that it's not easy to get back to the Final Four. That was the entire narrative around this team. I wanted to ask you this as well. We'll get to the check down here in just a second. What do we foresee Dan Hurley being in the big picture? Because he's the hottest coach right now, but he's also, and I'll go back to this, he's not on ESPN. So he's not going to get the ESPN love, and he's not going to be thrown in our face. I mean, we're going to hear more of Duke Carolina or John Shire than we're going to hear about Dan Hurley because his games aren't on ESPN. How are we going to start talking? In other words, I know Patino's still here, but, he's a St. John's. Cal is on the back end of his career. You look at Roy Williams has left. Coach K has left. Jay Wright has left. Dan Hurley is, he is great, and he's not the personality of a guy like Scott Drew. He's not a personality of even a Tom Izzo. I mean, Dan Hurley is theatrics on the sideline and the cockiness and some of the things he says. He's very Jersey guy.
Oh,
he's very,
through and through.
He's very man from New Jersey.
And he'll let you know it.
And he'll let and listen, they're going to be good. It's not like you expect them to fall off, the cliff as well. And if I even nitpicked, I could say their conference maybe was overrated. What, 3 teams make it from the Big East to the tournament this year? What do you think our conversation on Hurley now is going to be?
Well, I would argue they're underrated, the Big East. I think they should have got more teams in.
Well, you're probably not wrong. Seton Hall's probably looking
Seton
at
Hall
it saying,
did a nice
the
job for themselves in the NIT. I think Bob Hurley. I think Dan Hurley is the next college basketball villain.
Yeah.
And
I think
if you are a
villain,
it means you're good.
Yeah.
It means you're damn good. It means we're jealous of you.
Yeah.
We want to be you.
Bob Knight had some of that.
Sure.
Calipari had
Belichick,
some of that.
Belichick,
2010 to 2015.
Go to other sports.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, and no Purdue fan wants to hear it, and they certainly don't want to hear it after watching him last night. They probably yelled tech at, Dan Hurley about 19 times or get off the floor at him another 27 times.
Wow. Yeah.
But Andy, he is so freaking entertaining. And for college basketball, that's kind of a bit up in the air, just kind of like what it's going to look like for the next 5 to 10 years. A villain on the East Coast with the Jersey, attitude. That's a dream. Like, I love golf. Golf needs villains, Like,
that's not the Live Tour.
Right. Well, like, if golf had anything that sniffed a villain,
right,
they went to Live. Like,
yeah,
some of those guys on Live,
fair
you
point.
Would label that. I say this about IndyCar. Like, IndyCar, embrace the rivalry,
well,
embrace the villain.
I've asked that. Who's the villain
nature
in IndyCar? And you go, oh, yeah, there's really not one.
Right.
Like, come on.
So, like, again, like, you need that. And Hurley wants it.
He wants the smoke.
He frankly deserves it. This stat here from Pat Forty is absolutely wild to me. So we mentioned earlier, UConn, 12 straight tournament wins. They covered all 12 of those. They won all of them by at least 13. These back-to-back tournament runs. And in this year's tourney, of the 240 minutes that UConn played, they trailed for only 6 minutes and 22 seconds. Pat Forty takes it a step further. He goes, most impressive stat I found from UConn's 2-year run in the tourney. It has trailed in the second half of those 12 games for a total of 53 seconds. The first 15 seconds against Iona last year in round one, which I will never forget because I had UConn in the title game last year, and I go, oh my gosh, are they going to lose Iona? And then in the second round, they trailed for 38 seconds against St. Mary's. So that means starting with last year's Sweet 16, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four national title, this year from round one all the way through the national title.
It's unbelievable.
Andy, they didn't trail in the final 10 minutes of any game.
It's unbelievable. It really is. You mentioned New England Patriots. That's probably, is that the best example? It probably
yeah, and
is.
I would say the only reason it won't get that attention is just because it is Connecticut. Like, if it was Kentucky or Duke or that, we would hear it constantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those that like watch ESPN, the fact that ESPN doesn't air the Big East games probably plays a little bit
it matters
into that as well. But he's an absolute villain. I mean, the dude literally two-handed shoved one of his players to go further on the court last night with like 4 minutes to go in the game.
I will agree with Purdue fans. He should have been reprimanded in the first half about being on the floor. He was on the floor several times.
One of my buddy group texts said Hurley is crazy enough to get ejected from the national title game
while leading by 17.
And I sat there and read the text. I'm like, he's right. Like, if there is any coach right now in college basketball that could go to the shower early and have Bill Murray's son have to take over the rest of the way, it is Dan Hurley. So I totally get why Purdue fans want to hate him right now and probably should hate him right now. But damn, is that villain good for college basketball?
It's different crazy, but at some point we do need UConn and Dan Hurley to face off against Iowa and Fran McCaffrey. I mean, at some point we do need that. Put it on FS1.
Well,
no problem with it.
I'm sorry I haven't been up to date with Arizona State basketball. Where's his brother? Is his brother still coaching?
Yeah.
Is he still at Arizona State?
I think he's gone from Arizona State, right? I thought he was gone. I guess I should know that.
No, he's
still there. He's
so
there.
Greg Lansing, Indiana State, is with him on staff.
Yeah.
The very few times I've watched Arizona State over the last 6 to 8 years, you don't need to watch the game for more than 2 minutes before you realize the Hurley brothers coaching. We just need that matchup on an annual basis.
Yeah, Bobby has, unfortunately for Bobby Hurley, he has a theatrics, but he hasn't won, and he's Pac-12 basketball.